Today's September 5th. This is our second class in text context, and we are discussing the authorship of the books of Tanakh. This is the oldest bibliography that the world knows, and this is the bibliography of the most popular book of all time, and discuss the five books of Moshe. And then we discussed Nevi'im and the order of Nevi'im. Now we're talking about the order of Ksuvim. Okay, please turn to the page where it says Sidron Shel Ketuvim. Right, underline it. Okay. See it, everyone have it? Sidron Shel Ketuvim. Everyone have it? So while the order of the eight books of Nevi'im, well, contextually, right here, right? It's underlined. While the order of the books of Nevi'im were contextually ordered, first the Gemara got past all the books that tell bad things, Korban, right, Yirmiyahu, the beginning of Yechezkel, and then it ends with good things, right, the end of Yechezkel, Binyan Beit HaMikdash, Yishayahu. That's not a chronological order, that is a contextual order, all right? Then we had Treyasor, right, Gemara called Shneimasor. We asked two questions last class. Why did we put all 12 of them together? Right? Why not just put them where they are? Gemara's answer?
They were forgotten.
They would have been forgotten. They're small. They would have been forgotten if they were canonized separately. Some of them are just one, two chapters. All right? All right, but that does not suffice for some of them, which are larger than all of the Chamesh Megillot, and they're separate. All right? So the Gemara gives a second answer, that there were nine prophets whose prophecies three others felt belonged in a corpus that should be remembered by Jews for the next 2,000 years. Those nine Nevi'im, right, plus these three make up the 12 of what we call Shneimasar. The three were Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Those were the three prophets that basically set the Tanakh, as far as Chazal is concerned, that set this Tanakh and say, this is what it is. It's this, it's not something else. Okay? The three of them comprised the early members of what came to be known as Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Sound familiar? Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. The last of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah is mentioned in Pirkei Avos. His name is Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik knew Alexander the Great. So how long the activities of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah lasted is a great debate amongst historians. Right? If you can conclude the final analysis of this great debate, you can get a doctorate in that topic. All right? Just know someone I know, because she asked me about it, just wrote something in the, it's called Kol HaMavaser, maybe? Is that what it is? A Torah journal at YU. She asked me about it, and you can Google it. She really put down all of the various opinions of this time period of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. There seems to be close to 200 missing years of history. Amish. Just like that, out of the Persian dynasties. It's missing years of history. If you want to just Google the name, it happens to be my daughter, so her name is Mindy Schwartz. She wrote something on a few pages that really gives you all the opinions of this time period of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. It doesn't matter for us. Whether it's 30 years or 200 plus years, Anshei Knesset HaGedolah did the work of comprising all the Nevi'im that they felt deserved to be studied by the Jews in perpetuity, to read Haftorahs from them, to learn things from them, and to remember their names. Okay? Eliyahu does not have a book in Tanakh. His student Yonah does. Eliyahu's student Elisha doesn't have a book in Tanakh. If you were to choose which student of Eliyahu is his successor, everyone would say Elisha. Elisha is the one that Eliyahu chooses in Tanakh, if you know the story. You're taking over after me. Right? But Elisha doesn't have a book. Yonah, a minor student, who just says one thing in Sefer Melachim, as opposed to Elisha, who says 100 things in Sefer Melachim. Right? Yonah gets a book, Elisha doesn't. Elisha didn't write anything that Chagai Zecharia Malachi felt deserved to be preserved forever. To read on Yom Kippur, etc., etc. It's amazing. Everyone would agree. The Talmud Muvhak is Elisha. It's Yonah, no. But he gets it. Okay? That's the bottom line of what this Treyasar is. Right? Now, on to Ksuvim. You had a question?
So, Chagai Zecharia and Malachi led to the formation of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, or what? What about the other nine? How did they
were over 250 years before then. They just, it would be like a small body today determining which founding fathers of this country and authors of descriptions of what the foundation of this country should be put into a book for people to read forever. Why is James Madison good and Thomas Jefferson good, but someone else not?
So those three chose the other nine?
Yes, and we assume they did so prophetically or didn't just do so haphazardly. Look, amongst these choices even, I'm sure Ovadia wrote more than one chapter. And he spoke more than one chapter in his whole life. But that's all of Ovadia that they put in. You get it? Okay. The word that describes this process is called canonization. Familiar with it? Canonization. To canonize something is to make it, usually you use the word holy, right? To make something holy for people to take seriously, right? The next topic is, in this semester, we'll discuss the difference between perfectly worthwhile Jewish sources that are worthy to study, but are not canonized. See, so what's the difference? If they're worthy to study, what difference does it make? Right? If it's a good play, do you care if it's Shakespeare or not? There's much more at stake in Tanakh. Right? When the Ramah writes what kind of wine you should use at the Pesach Seder, right? It's not his chiddush, but he writes it in the Shulchan Aruch. He says that you should use red wine, preferably, unless you live in a place where they accuse Jews of using Christian blood for Pesach. But you should use red wine because, and he quotes a pasuk in Mishlei that says, "Don't be seduced by the redness of wine." He derives from that pasuk that red must be the best wine, because otherwise he would have spoken about being seduced by some other type of wine. Tell me your name, please.
Avram.
See me afterwards because you're not signed up for the course, all right?
Okay.
Okay. So that you would never look at a verse, let's say, of a famous poet who lived in the 13th century who wrote that in his play and say that. That guy may be right about how people view wine, but you wouldn't cite a halacha like that. You following? But if it's in Mishlei, Mishlei is prophetic. It's part of it got through Chagai Zecharia Malachi, it got through Anshei Knesset Gedolah, right? There's a book just like Mishlei that's in what's called the Apocrypha, written at the time of, according to some Maamar Chazal, he was Yirmiyahu's son, Mishlei Ben Sira. You hear of it? Ben Sira. Buy it in this farm store. Beautiful proverbs. But Chazal would never derive a halacha like that from a pasuk in Mishlei Ben Sira. As we'll see throughout Shas, this book is cited about 10 times, teaching various things in the Talmud. But they're just like good advice. Have you ever been a guest someplace and you invited someone over to the house to be a guest also? Would you think of doing such a thing? Right? The Gemara says, never do that. He says, it's terrible. Why? Because the Pasuk in Mishlei Ben Sira says it's bad behavior. Right? So the Talmud describes this etiquette I can learn from Mishlei Ben Sira. What wine to use at the Seder, I'm only using from someone who gets into this book. Got it? Okay, that's a brief definition of canonization. All right? There's much more to say about it. Okay, that's Nevi'im. All right, let's go. Sidron Shel Ketuvim. You look at the order that the Gemara mentions right here, starting with the word root. Tell me, what is the basis of this order? Look at it. Read it. See, read it to yourselves. You get it in 5 seconds.
History.
Yes, this is a chronological listing. Everyone clear?
Where are we at? We're on the second page now?
No, it's still where I started. Sidron Shel Ketuvim, it's underlined. Right? This is a chronological order. So it's interesting. The Mishnah, the Brisa gave you the list of Nevi'im, not in chronological order, right? You with me? And gave an explanation. We want to do all the good stuff and then the bad stuff. Ksuvim is chronological. Okay? By the Gemara asking, why do you tell me Yirmiyahu Yechezkel Yishayahu? By asking that, the Gemara assumes a bibliography should be chronological. Give me the oldest books first and then the newer books. Right? So, it told you that in the Nevi'im. But in Ksuvim, it said Sidron Ksuvim Rus, Sefer Tehillim. Tehillim is called Sefer Tehillim because not every chapter in this book is a Tehillah. In fact, only one chapter in the whole book begins with the word Tehillah. Most of the 57 chapters begin with the word Mizmor. Might have been a better name for the book to call it Mizmorim and not Tehillim. Doesn't matter so much for us. It's called Sefer Tehillim because there are 5 distinct books. Did I discuss this last class? 5 very distinct books in Sefer Tehillim. They have different styles. They have different... Of course, the Bible critics see different styles. What do they say?
Different authors.
Different authors, right? It's nonsense. It's nonsense. The same author can write very different styles because of a book written over 40 years. Is the author of Marjorie Morningstar certainly not the same author as the Cain Newton? It's ridiculous. Or This Is My God. You can't write different... they're going to say, yeah, but not in the same book. Tehillim is not one book, it's 5 books. So like a Sefer Torah, that's certainly very different styles. Vayikra looks to not be the same author as Devarim. Or Bereishis, for that matter. Of course not. The events in those books take place over many years. Right? Okay. When we do the ancient Near East, we'll see how different the books of the Torah are because each one has a different agenda. Well, guess what? So do the 5 books of Tehillim. I would like to suggest to you, I'm writing on Sefer Tehillim, is that the 5 books of Tehillim represent 5 different stages of David HaMelech's life. And we can have to find where we fit into each one of those stages, because we go through those 5 stages also. If it was a class in Tehillim, I'd elaborate, but that's it. Okay, that's why it's a Sefer Tehillim. Go on. The Eov. Okay, Rus is definitely before Tehillim. When did Eov live? What's the conclusion of the Gemara? By the way, right after this. This Gemara gets off on a tangent of all the 24 books in the Bible. 2 pages of tangents on Eov, of all the books. The author of Eov is Moshe. So Moshe should be first. Moshe Kaporos. This is chronological, right? The author of Eov is Moshe, and the conclusion of the Gemara is that he never lived. Because it's just a possible story. It's not a true story. Okay. Okay. You can look in the introduction there. You'll see what Eov is about. I'm sure you all know. Book of Job. Okay. Mishlei, Koheles, Shir HaShirim. Who is considered the author of these 3 books? Mishlei, Koheles, Shir HaShirim. Shlomo HaMelech. Right. So why is it Mishlei, Koheles, Shir HaShirim? Mishlei, Koheles, Shir HaShirim. What's the
order? That order specifically?
Yeah, because we're talking about chronological order here. So our question is so far, why is Eov where it is if Moshe is the author? 2. Why is Shlomo's 3 books written in this strange order?
Yeah, it's definitely not in the order that he was, being written.
How do you know?
He wrote it.
How do you know?
Didn't you write Shir HaShirim?
How do you know that? Okay. That is a medrash, right? There is a medrash in Gracious Rabba that Shlomo wrote Shir HaShirim in his youth, Mishlei in middle age, and Koheles in his pessimistic old age, after living, seeing everything. Right? Makes sense. Rashi here says, since this is a chronological list, it seems that according to this source, it disagrees with that Midrash, and that he wrote Mishlei in his youth, Koheles in middle age, and Shir HaShirim in old age. As much as this doesn't seem to fit, I mean, what you're saying is makes sense, right? Right? So I would like to suggest that the source of these three, this order here, very interesting consideration. There is a body that's, I'm sure, studied by a billion and a half people. It has a particular order to it that has nothing to do with chronology nor context, and is simply ordered by the size of its chapters. Simple. The Quran. Every chapter called a surah in the Quran is simply ordered by, not when Muhammad said it, not when it was taught, but it starts the largest and goes down to the smallest. Simple. It was a style that I think the Gemara is telling you. Mishlei is 31 chapters, Koheles is 11 chapters, Shir HaShirim is 8 chapters. By the way, it's a much older source than the Quran that you're reading right here. The Talmud is ordered this way. Right? Unless there's a separate reason for what I'm about to tell you, like it happens rarely, like after Sanhedrin comes Makos and then Shavuos, because and the Gemara asks this question, why are you putting Makos here? It belongs at the end of Nezikin. It's only 3 chapters. And it says, because Makos is considered a continuation of Sanhedrin, one in the year Sanhedrin. Right? Listen to the order of Moed. Shabbos, 24 chapters. Erev and Pesachim, each with 10 chapters. Then the next Masechta is not Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaSukkah. That's just in some Talmuds that you see because of just convenience. Rosh Hashanah comes first, then Yom Kippur, then Sukkot. The order in Shas is Shabbos, Erevin, Pesachim, Yuma, Sukkah, Beitza, Rosh Hashanah, etc. Yuma, 8 chapters, Sukkah and Beitza, 5 chapters, Rosh Hashanah, 4 chapters, and then it goes down. And this goes straight through the 6 orders of Shas. Books are listed by their size. And the Quran, Mistama, like, I'm going to get into the history of how the Quran was originally written. It was written by Jews, forcibly, but Muslims know this. Okay? So they incorporated this standard of listing chapters by their size. Yes?
Could you say the chapter leader for initially called Koheles?
Uh-huh.
31, 11, 8.
All right, so that is the that would explain this order, okay? So the Ksuvim is also not strictly chronological, as you're about to learn. Eov is before Rus and Tehillim. So right, it wants to be chronological, but if there's another reason to not be, it'll take it. Next book is Kinos. All right, Kinos is what we call Eicha. If you go into a Sfarim store and say, I'd like to buy a Kinos, they're going to give you a book of what we say after davening on Tisha B'Av morning. not a book with 5 chapters that we lay in on the night of Tisha B'Av, right? So why is the Gemara calling this Kinos? Answer, throughout Shas, throughout Midrashim, did I mention this last? Yeah? Books are called by their content, not their first word. Eicha in Hebrew means how. That's a strange name to give to a book. Right? I mentioned this last class. Rashi refers to the 4th book of the Torah as Sefer Vayidaber. It's the first word. 3rd book is Vayikra, the 4th book is Vayidaber. It became popular in the Middle Ages to call books by their first word, or the first major word, Elish Mos, Ve'ilah HaDvarim. Okay? Got it? Okay? You will sometimes find a Talmudic reference. This is a Talmud printed in Poland in 1870. And it says the name of a book by its first word. I must say, it's a copyist who just changed the word. Chazal do not know from calling books by their first major word. Right? It's not done. The book is called by its content. And Kinos is a tiny example of this. It's going to be a much more significant example of this coming up very shortly, in about 15 minutes. All right? So you got it, everyone? Kinos? If you asked for a book of Lamentations, which is nothing but the English translation of the word kinos, the Sfarim store may give you an echel. How's that? Right? If you would buy a sefer of Megillas Eicha with a title at the top, you might see Lamentations, you might see E-I-C-H-A, right? You might see Aleph Yud Chaf Hey, but you will never see how with a question mark. Right? How have you allowed this to happen? Eicha means how. Okay? Alright, so that's Kinos, got it? So we're already now in Yirmiyahu's time. Daniel, Megillas, Esther, Ezra, V'divrei Hayamim. Notice only Esther is called Megillas Esther. There are five Megillos. Why didn't you call Megillas Shirashir? Megillas Koheles, Megillas Rus, Megillas Eicha, Megillas Kinos. As far as the Gemara is concerned, only one book of Ksuvim is called a Megillah. Right? Who was the first to call the five, put these five books together as Chamesh Megillos? We don't know. But it probably has to do with a Gaonic tradition that only comes about the 8th or 9th century. We don't know the first day they decided to do this, to read these five Megillot at different times of the year. As far as the Talmud is concerned, only one of these is a custom. Purim, Megillat Esther. Right? That we read Shir Shirim on Pesach, Rus on Shavuos, Eicha on Tisha B'Av, Koheles on Sukkos is a late minhag. When that became such a minhag, probably people started to refer to all five of these as Chamesh Megillot. You with me? So only, as far as the Gemara is concerned, only Esther is called Megillat Esther. Right. Ezra v'Divrei Hayamim. Do you know that someone's missing here? Remember the number 24. Whoever makes a list of Tanakh, it's always 24 books. Even the Gemaras give hints to this in the Torah, in Koheles, in different books, that they know that the Tanakh has to have 24 books. Who's missing? Who's always with Ezra?
Nehemiah.
Where's Nehemiah? Who took him out? He's in there. You'll find Nehemiah in every Tanakh. Right? Who took him out? And why? Right? It's bigger than Ezra. On this, I just have to tell you an Agadah. Okay? Ezra and Nehemiah worked together. Ezra, the religious leader. Nehemiah, the political leader. The two of them are responsible for us being here today, keeping mitzvahs and studying these books. If not for Ezra and Nehemiah, we would not have succeeded in by Hashem. It was a prediction from Yirmiyahu that we would, but they're the two most responsible. There seems to be another name in this mix in other books. His name is Zerubbabel. Does it sound familiar? You sing about him in Moses Tzur, right? Zerubbabel. To the extent that Ibn Ezra, who's not usually given to this kind of parshanut, he thinks that Zerubbabel is Nehemiah. Right? Zerubbabel was his Babylonian name that his parents gave him when they were in Babel. And when they got back to Israel, his name is Nehemiah. Okay? So, my question reverts. If he was so important for Jewish history, why isn't he counted in our Gemara? Right? So the Gemara is baffling. It's really baffling. This is supposed to be a 24 books, not 25. So the Gemara, ever always looking for a moral reason for any kind of question like this, right, says the following. Four times in this book, Nehemiah, this prophet asks God to remember him for all that he's doing. Fair enough. He did some great things. He wasn't quiet about it, all right? And he points it out throughout his book. I'm doing great things for the Jewish people. But one of those times, he says, and God, none of the other leaders of Israel are doing what I'm doing. Why do you have to say that? The Gemara says that disqualified him to be considered for his own book. Ezra Nehemiah is called Ezra. Okay? They say he helped write Divrei Hayamim. Very, very crucial person in Jewish history. But he doesn't get his own book. Ezra Divrei Hayamim, that's it. Ezra Nehemiah is called Ezra. Got it? Sometimes there's a like Rashi. Sometimes in Yirmiyahu, when he wants to refer to a pasuk in Nechemiah, he calls it Sefer Ezra. Look up in the end of Sefer Ezra, and this is what we'll find. Okay. Right. And Nechemiah was flat out wrong when he says no one else is doing keeping my standard. He's talking about avoiding the king's food and wine, right? Not eating the king's meat. Excuse me. And Sefer Daniel, it says Daniel also refused to eat the king's meat. At great peril. Esther, it says this is a medrash, but it says Vayishaneha. They did different things for her than everybody else. And Chazal tell us, and it's credible, right? That it means that she insisted on a different diet than the other girls for 6 months. Right? So we see that Nehemiah, other prophets are doing this also. What do you have to do? You want to call attention to yourself, good gazoot. But you have to bring down someone else? You see, the Chazal like this kind. This is a vintage explanation for something like this. All right. Okay. So you have the 24 books. So you got. Okay. Now, if you turn to the first page, you'll see that the order in our Tanakh of Ksuvim is definitely not chronological. Right. The order is actually a lot easier to remember than the order of the Brisa. Brisa is fully down here to the right, type, and then to the left is the order in any Tanakh that you'll buy. Right? The order of the Brisa is, you see Emet spelled backwards, Eov, Mishlei, Tehillim. See it, Emet spelled backwards, those three? Looking at this page right now. These are books that teach the truth of life. It's not about a narrative, although Eov has a little story in the beginning. It's about the truth of life. It's known in English as wisdom literature. So you got that, Emet backwards. Then the next five are the Chamesh Megillot. Can you figure out the order? Why is it this order? Shir Shirim Rut. Shir Shirim is long after Rut. Echa is long after Koheles. Why is it before Koheles? What's the order? Said it before, about 10 minutes ago. Shir Shirim is read on Pesach, Rus on Shavuot, Seicha on Tisha B'Av, Koheles on Sukkot, and Esther on Purim. It's the order of the year from Pesach. Okay? Got it? HaChodesh HaZelochim. The order from Nisan.
What about Esther?
Esther is Purim. It's the end of the year.
It is.
From Nisan. Hello? Shir Shirim is read in Nisan. Then Esther takes place in Persia. So does Daniel, or most of Daniel. Okay, Daniel, Ezra, and Devarim, there you go. There are your books. Okay. If you're showing, you probably know Yoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, Malachim. You probably know Yishayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, three Yuds, Treyasar. Now you've got your MS, Chamesh Megillos, which ends with Purim, Esther, Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, Devarim. Finished. You know your 24 books. Okay, you will be asked to remember them. That's
one of the questions on your quiz. Yes? Why is Emet backwards?
That's the Gemara's first question. Take a look. Right above where it says, three lines above where it says, Mik Tavon, it says, Uleman de Omar. Everyone find your place and read along with me. Uleman de Omar. Got it? Seven lines from the bottom. There's a chet right there. According to the one who says that Eov was in the days of Moshe, it doesn't matter, everyone agrees Moshe wrote it. There are opinions that Yaakov, he lived in the time of Yaakov or Avraham. More likely, by the way. Eov bimei Moshe haya, liktimei li'Eov bereisha. Eov should be written before, should be appear before Ksuvim. Right? Especially if you would switch Eov with Tehillim, right? And you have MS spelled straight, right? You have a question. But that also wouldn't be in order. Right? So why don't you want to start Ksuvim with Eov? Atule bepuranuta lo mitchalinan. I don't want to start a list of ksuvim with such a bad story. Eov suffers through his story. There's nothing but death and suffering in the first 39 chapters. So I don't want to start ksuvim with that. So the Gemara says, Rus nami puranusi. Rus also begins with death. Three people die in the first few psukim of Rus. How are you starting ksuvim with Rus by that measure? Everyone with me? So the Gemara says, Puranus di isle acharis. At least the bad stuff of Rus leads to her going back with her mother-in-law, becoming, you know, if there was never a famine in the beginning of Rus, Rus would have lived and died in Moab, and we wouldn't have David HaMelech. Get it? She never would have come back. Why would she make her way to Israel if not for this famine and the boys dying? Right? So Rus, the bad stuff in Rus has, all right, that's another moral point. Right? Lots of bad stuff happens. Work it through. It's bad while it's happening. You'll work it through. That's the point of Eov. Okay, that's the point of Moshe writing Eov. Moshe says, God tells him, you can't see my face, but you can see my back. You can't see my face because it'll clog your brain from being the command center of your body, and you'll die. But you can't see my back. Now, if God doesn't have a face, he doesn't have a back either. But no, they're figurative. It means that while the bad stuff is happening, Eov, strengthen yourself that you'll have the resolve to understand this in retrospect. Not face to face. Maybe 500 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, maybe sometime from now, you'll see the back of this and you'll understand. Right? Not front, but from the back. All right, so that's why we say that Moshe wrote Eov. Only the man who could see God's back would be able to write a book where chapter 40 and 41 rehabilitates the whole book. All right, and 42. Yes.
If we still don't want to start the order of Ketuvim with Eov, then it doesn't seem like we've seen God's back. Like it seems like we still don't really understand Eov.
You're correct about one thing, is that at the end of Eov, the only answer Eov gets is has nothing to do with his own personal suffering, but that there is an all-knowing God who's at the wheel, who's in charge, has a great chasm between you and him. Here's the amoeba, here's you, and God is in across the ocean. All right? So if you appreciate that, and there's someone at the wheel, just accept it. That's what God basically is telling Moshe. All right. Okay, so that's Moshe's authorship. All right. Tosfos, by the way, asks, wait a second. You say that Rus is okay to start serving because it ends good? So does Eov. Eov also ends good. Right? Tosfos just answers this last Tosfos on the page. Tosfos answers that Eov's good is only for Eov. Rus is good is for all Klal Yisrael, who's the great-grandmother of David. All right, anyway, now we're getting into Mik Savon. I put a box around the words Umi Kisavon. You see it? Who wrote these books? Right? The bibliography not only has to list the books, it has to tell you who wrote them. Okay, I mentioned the very beginning of this discussion, last class, that the reason why this isn't Bava Basra is because the chapter is called Hashutfin, and we're talking about dissolving partnerships. So if two people own a Tanakh, neither of us could afford buying this ourselves, but what we did was we chipped in, each paid half. Now you have it 1 week, I have it the next week, or vice versa, whatever it is. And now we want to dissolve all of our holdings, right? So how do we dissolve this? So you look inside. Is this, what kind of Tanakh is this? Is this the one that has Yecheskel in it? Is it the one that doesn't have Mishle Ben Sira in it? At the time these discussions were taking place, there might have been a Christian, a secret Christian, who wanted to put some evangelical books inside. Right? So we'll see the process whereby we, Chagai Zecharia Malachi might have done this very early on in history, but there were still discussions about what they did and what they put in pretty late. Right? This Brisa happens to fit exactly what we have in Tanakh today. But as you may know, if you've studied Talmud, not every Brisa reflects the opinion of everybody else in the Talmud. Right? Following? Every page of the Talmud has different opinions. Right? You read a Mishnah and then you find out that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda disagree. Right? Okay. All right, so umik savon, Moshe kosav sifra. But just your initial thought process. What does this word mean, sifro? Moshe kosav sifro.
His book.
Yeah, what is it? What is it?
Torah.
But doesn't the Torah have five books in it?
Devarim.
So the Ritva suggests that this might be just Devarim.
The other four books, certainly gracious, is before he was alive. So what? You couldn't write about things before you were alive. You shouldn't be writing things about after you're alive. Well, why not if you're a prophet? But we'll get into that shortly. All right? The Ritva suggests that this is Devarim because of what follows. Moshe kosav sifro uparshas bilam. Parshas bilam. Remember about 15 minutes ago, I told you 15 minutes from then, we would bring back this discussion of books called by their content, right? There is no such book in the Torah called Parshas Bilam. By our reckoning, and surely this is not a separate book that existed in the ancient world about Bilam's, you all know what the prophet I'm talking about, right? About Bilam's wisdom, because even if such a book did exist, that shouldn't be counted in this list, because this is a list of the books of Tanakh. And ostensibly, that book of wisdom is not part of our Tanakh. Rather, what would you say Parshas Bilam is? What we call Balak. Why does the Gemara call it Parshas Bilam? Because if you had that Parsha that we lay between Chukas and Pinchas, when Chukas and Balak are not together, let's say, right? If you had that in front of you and you were told, give a name to this Parsha, by the standards of the Gemara's time, what would you call it? Bilam.
I would call it Bilam, not Balak. We call it Balak, but Yar Balak, because he's beginning the Parsha, right? Okay, so most Midrashim, including the Ritva, explains our Gemara's statement here, Moshe Kosav Parshas Bilam, that is Parshas Balak, what appears in Sefer Bamidbar, in chapter 21, 22-25, right? Designations, by the way, that were made by Christians. We don't know from proper. We'll talk about that when we do Masorah. All right. So that just begs another question. If Parshas Bilam is what we call Parshas Balak, ask me a question.
Why did he write it?
Not how could Moshe write it? Moshe's a prophet, and although Moshe's not in the story at all, no, there's a stronger question than that.
He wrote all of it.
Yeah, the Balak is part of the Torah, right? If Moshe wrote the whole Torah, then why do you have to tell me a particular parsha in the Torah that he also wrote? Isn't that included in Sifro? So that's why the Ritva said no. Sifro is just Devarim. So, of all parshios that you insist outside of Devarim that Moshe wrote, you're telling me he also wrote Parshas Bilam? Why? Why would you say that? Why not Parshas Matos? Right? Right before Devarim. For this, we need to tell the very important difference between Devarim and the rest of the Torah. Right? Devarim is all Moshe's original statements. He's talking. He's talking in first person. Right? There are other parts of the Torah where Moshe is talking. Who said, Shlach Nabiyat Tishlach, God, at the burning bush, don't send me, send someone else. I'm not, God told him to say those words? Of course not. Right? In the other four books, Moshe says lots of things, but it's most of those books are not what Moshe said. They're mitzvahs from God, they're events, they're etc., etc., right? But Devarim is all Moshe. Got it? God told him, now, put down, this is what I want you to write with Devarim, leave those things out, like what Chagas Chaim Malachi did with the other nine prophets, right? Okay. Parshas, what we call Parshas Balak, does stand out from the rest of the Torah significantly. One, Moshe has nothing to do with the whole story. Two, it's the only Parsha from Bo, where the first mitzvah to the Bnei Yisrael appears, and Vayelech, where the last mitzvah appears, every 7 years to do the mitzvah of Hakel. The only Parsha, the mitzvah after that is to write a Sefer Torah. Every single Parsha between those two, Bo and Vayelech, has mitzvahs in it. Except Balak. Not a single mitzvah. Moshe's name appears only once in the entire parsha, and the very three psukim from the end of the parsha. The whole story is, doesn't seem to belong in the Torah. You think Bilam is the only person to curse the Jews? Lots of people curse the Jews in the ancient Near East. What do we care? Just don't, God, you're the one who makes a curse or a blessing. Count. Don't listen to him. Why did you even include it in the Torah? Right? To answer that question, you have to know that in the ancient Near East, when you fought a battle, you had a few important things to have in that battle. A general, a standing army, and a cursor. Everyone fought wars at the ancient Near East with a professional cursor who came to battle usually wearing some gaudy garment with feathers and smoke if he had a good reputation, he could charge any amount. What's very interesting is that the title of this person in the ancient Near East, everyone had one, is phonetically very close to the name Bilam. And it's maybe Moshe didn't know his name. And he called him by the title of what this thing is. It's a Barum. What we would say just phonetically, spelling in English, Barum. All right? And Moshe, who maybe had a lisp, he called him Bilam. All right? So just perfectly legitimate. All right? This is what Bilam did. He was great. What he did was he looked at the two sides and he sold himself to the side that he felt was more likely to win the battle. All right? In other words, if you wanted to hire him, he says, I looked at your army, I looked at your general, I looked at the landscape. You're not winning this battle. Forget it. I'm not going to a loser. Right? There are people who do this. They're actuaries. They make predictions. And he was the best at making those predictions. So he could charge whatever he wanted. So if Israel knew that Moab had a Barum against them, they'd say, big deal. Big deal. We have God. Problem. Right after Bilam's curse, within a few weeks, Israel was told, in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, do not charge your army against the Moabites. They are descendants of Lot, and I don't want you fighting Moabites. You got it? If Bilam had been allowed to curse, right, without a story in the Torah of God's reaction, the Israelites, this is Ibn Ezra writing, probably would have attributed this point, right, of not attacking Moab to Bilam's curse. Right? Even if it said, because it's the land of Lot and I don't want you fighting them. You hear? So you would think that this story doesn't even belong. So comes our Gemara to tell us a very important story. And Moshe wrote it. Even Bilam's prophecy goes through the Avla Nevi'im, through Moshe's pen. Moshe's, how he recorded it, through Moshe's record. Come to us through Moshe's prophecy. Not that Bilam wrote out what he said. I mean, how could Moshe know what he said even? Right? You think Bilam wrote down all of his curses and then and gave it to someone? Right? No Jew was involved in Parshas Balak. It was just Bilam, Balak, and Balak's officers back and forth. Okay, let's go. Moshe Kosav Sifro Uparshas Bilam, which is part of Sifro. By the way, most Rishonim say Sifro means all five books. Alright? Uparshas Bilam V'Iyov, as I said before. Yoshua Kosav Sifro Ushmone Psukim Shevator. Okay? Yoshua wrote his book and eight psukim that are at the end of the Torah. What about those eight psukim?
Why? Because
Moshe dies in the last eight psukim. The eighth pasuk from the end of the Torah says, "Vayomas Moshe." This Stam Brisa can't imagine that either a biological problem or a philosophical problem. Biological, because dead men can't write. Philosophical problem is that if he's alive writing, "Vayomas Moshe," it looks like a lie. Can't put a lie in the Torah. All right, it'll be true tomorrow. But all right, no. Okay. So this Stam Brisa holds that Yoshua wrote the last eight psukim of the Torah. Okay, clear with that? Let's go on. Shmuel kasav sifro b'shoftim berus. Okay, Shmuel wrote three books. Notice we already have two authors with books in Nevi'im and Ksuvim, or Torah and Ksuvim. we'll have to describe what's the difference between Nevi'im and Ksuvim then. What puts you in Nevi'im or what puts you in Ksuvim? Is it a process based on the author of the book or the contents of the book?
Think that over.
David Kosav Sefer Tehillim al Yedei Asara Zakenu. What? Really? Tehillim was written by 10 authors, including David. Because headings in Tehillim begin with all kinds of authors. Mizmor La'asav, Lamnatzeach Ivnei Korah, right? There are all kinds of authors in Sefer Tehillim. And the Gemara gathers them all together. Now, the authorship of Tehillim is somewhat difficult, but I'm going to raise it next class with three things. These last eight psukim, Tehillim, and Yeshayahu. You know why I'm including Yeshayahu in this list? Well, let me tell you. The last eight psukim, how could Moshe write it? Someone after must have written it. You all know when David HaMelech lived. There are chapters in Tehillim that speak explicitly about the Churban Beit HaMikdash. Anaros Godel Shem Yishadu Gam Bachinu. As if though we're coming back to after the destroyed Yerushalayim. Why would someone write about a destroyed city 500 years from now when he's just building it? Even if he is a prophet and he sees it in the future. Why would you write that about for your readers? That's Tehillim's problem. Yeshayahu has a similar problem because the last 27 chapters of Yeshayahu speaks explicitly. And look, you could say, Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, be comforted, my people, for some bad things that have happened. But he says explicitly, he talks about life in Bavel, after the Churban. Yeshayahu lived 150 years before the Churban. If Yeshayahu already wrote about the Churban and tells the people, you've been in Bavel long enough, the 70 years are almost over, it's time to come home to Israel. Right? How could he write that way, considering that Yirmiyahu, 150 years later, started off his prophecy by saying, there's Churban coming, guys. New kids on the block here called Bavel. They're going to destroy us unless you repent. The people should have told him, what are you talking about, Yirmiyahu? Yeshayahu 150 years ago already spoke about that Churban. There's nothing we could do to avoid it. You following? So what does that mean for the last 27 prakim of Yeshayahu? Okay, last eight psukim of Torah, Tehillim, end of Yeshayahu. That's what we can talk about next class. All right? This is what I'd like you to do. And next class, I'm going to start to incorporate what I said. There's no test, but I will call on one of you to read. That's your test. Okay? That means that when we turn this page over, we're on the second page of this Gemara. There's something called art scrolls if you cannot do Gemara on your own. Right? This box that's right there, you see it? Everyone tell me yes, you see it.
Yep.
Right? Okay, I expect you to know what's in that box for next class. Got it?
Is that included in Rashi Tosfot?
Simple Gemara. Okay, there's a Rashi that tries to explain something about Chizkiyahu, but it's not crucial to understand the Gemara. All right? We will discuss the books of Tanakh that have content in it that makes it, from a rational standpoint, difficult to imagine how that person could have written this. All right? And we'll identify what we mean by a rational standpoint. Okay. One of you joined the class just recently. Tell me your name, please.
Avram Glazer.
Oh, Avram, I have you.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
All right, okay, fine. I didn't, because you weren't here last time. The last name. Okay.